The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Avatamsaka. We've been working on the Avatamsakas, I think, just about all of you know. Yes. And we're working through the 10 practices. These are the 10 paramitas. And today it's the 7th paramita, which is skillful means, upaya. And we tend to think of skillful means in terms of helping other people. I say, what does skillful means mean? And I myself tend to sort of go blank and think, I don't know, I haven't got any skillful means. I can barely help myself. But actually, we do have skillful means. And skillful means isn't just to help other people, it's to help ourselves as well. The Buddha was a master of skillful means. He had all these different people come to him. He had rude Brahmins, he had kings, he had courtesans, he had farmers, merchants, monks, wives, husbands, all kinds of people. And all of them he would talk to in a different way, depending on what their situation was, or what their difficulty was, or what they were asking him about. And he would give advice to a king about treating his subjects fairly. He'd give advice to a rich person about being generous with his wealth, to spouses about how to treat each other, to monks about how to purify the heart. All these different people he gave different advice to. He was not stuck with one idea. He would apply what was helpful to that being out of his, you know, compassion and wisdom, seeing what was needed and applying it. Just wonderful. Buddhism, you know, there's all these different schools, different ways of training and meditation. That's skillful means. We practice what will work for us, what helps us. One way of training may not work for us so well, but something else may work just fine. It may just be the very thing. Even within our own tradition, we have slightly different ways of meditating, slightly different ways of practice. Each of us is slightly different. Different ways of helping ourselves, helping other beings. Because skillful means isn't just for helping other people, although we tend to think of it that way, it's also helping ourselves, because we are beings too. So skillful means is also, how do I help myself? How do I train myself? What are my weaknesses? What are my faults? How can I help? How can I train these things? And what works for me? What things in meditation help me? What kinds of practice help me? What precepts do I really need to work on? And considering all these things is a really helpful way of practicing skillful means. Now, the Avatamsaka, once again, throws us a curveball. Because here we are. It's supposed to be a skillful means. And the Avatamsaka is talking about non-attachment. What is the great Bodhisattva's practice of non-attachment? And I thought, okay, here we go again. You know, how do we relate these? And of course, they're closely related. Because if we can practice non-attachment, then we're much more likely to be able to practice skillful means. Because when there's attachment, we tend to be less than skillful. We don't see very clearly. If we're clinging to something, we're not seeing clearly and we tend to make a mess of things. We don't know how to help. People we dearly love, we tend to be the last person to help them because we're clinging to them. We know what's best for them. We want them to be such and such a way. And we can sort of stifle them and prevent them from making their own mistakes, especially like parents with kids. Classic. The child wants to do something, the parent thinks it's a terrible idea. But in fact, if they just let the person go off and do what they want to do, or make a pig's ear of it if they need to, and learn something, sometimes that's better than saying, oh, no, no, you'll be much better off if you do it this other way. Because we love them, and we don't see clearly, and we can't just relinquish and let them do it, because we're afraid. And of course, we have all kinds of attachments. We've got attachments to other people. We love them, or we can't stand them, or whatever. And and how we work with that. It's hard to be skillful with someone you don't like. You just, you know, tend not to have quite the same clear view. Attachments to our own comfort, our own body, our own preferences, our nicenesses. It clouds our view, and we can be less than skillful, indulgent, you know, just not very clear-sighted when it comes to our own preferences, our own comfort, our own things we like. Our experience and our opinions about ourselves, about other people. This person's this way, and he's always been that way, and he's always going to be that way. In fact, they may change, but because we're attached to our view, we tend to see them in that way and treat them in that way. And although they may be changing and working on themselves, we have a tendency to put them in that box of the way they used to be or where we used to perceive them and not see that actually things are changing. And the same with ourselves, to see that we're changing and we can change. We're not stuck with the difficulty we've been struggling with for 50 years. We can actually change. In fact, we do, and when we see we do, it helps us. But to see that we can change and not to be stuck with our view of ourself is really helpful. Attachment to our positive view of ourselves. It's hard to see our own faults. It's much easier to see somebody else's. You can see it quite clearly, somebody else's shortcoming, mistake, blind spot. But our own blind spots are kind of up there, so we don't see them very well. But if we try to see where our own blind spots are, then we can work on them, and that's a skillful means. Seeing where our attachments lie, seeing where we're blinded, seeing where we're one-sided, just seeing those clingings and preferences helps us to work on them and to be more skillful. Attachment to our ideas of training and enlightenment. We know what training is, we know what enlightenment is, but we don't. Always worrying about our mistakes, attachment to our failings, our mistakes. I have this, you know, endlessly worrying about something that we feel we're doing wrong. I have this terrible problem, I'm just awful at this, or this is my constant thing, and dwelling on it to an excess. But if we can see where we've made a mistake, see where we've fallen in again, oh, okay, and then move on and not just continually give ourselves a bad time about it. That helps us to actually be more skillful with that thing, not just kind of grinding our nose in it, but being able to see it more dispassionately and not just worrying about it. Okay. What is the great bodhisattva's practice of non-attachment? These great bodhisattvas, with minds free from attachment, can enter countless worlds and adorn and purify these countless worlds. Their minds free from attachment to anything in these worlds, seeing clearly, and therefore they can move in and out. If you're clinging on to one place or one person or one view, you can't move freely. But the great bodhisattvas, we're little bodhisattvas, but we can emulate the great bodhisattvas and try to practice the way they do. The great bodhisattvas can move in and out of countless worlds and adorn and purify them, helping beings, not stuck with a view or stuck with one thing. Skillful means. Also, they visit countless Buddhas, pay their respects, wait on them, make offerings. In every instant, they see countless Buddhas. And they have no attachment to the Buddhas. They have no attachment to the Buddha's places, no attachment to the Buddha lands either. No attachment to the distinguishing marks of the Buddhas. And while they see the Buddha's light and hear the Buddha's sermons, yet they have no attachment. This gets hard to imagine. Seeing Buddhas and having no attachment to them and not thinking, whoa, you know, that's what I want. It's attachment to ideas about what a Buddha is, or, you know, how can I be a Buddha? just being able to come and go, to go in and out of Buddha lands, come back to our mundane world, go and help beings somewhere else, helping ourselves, not stuck with, I really want this, I really want enlightenment, and this is the way to get it, you know. Not clinging to that, because that's obstructing our soul. If we can go in and out and hold it with a lighter grip, it helps us. Kishtigarbha Bodhisattva, great Bodhisattva, dwells in hell. He's not stuck in some Buddha land where he can't help anybody. He's living in hell, helping beings until they're all released. He said he made a great vow that he would dwell in hell until all beings who were living in the hells were released. So he knows what it's like down there, and he can help beings. But he wouldn't be much use if he was just sitting up in some Buddha land, you know, enjoying himself. He lives down there in hell, and he goes in and out, but he lives down there to help beings. Wonderful, wonderful. To help and comfort beings there. Having heard the Buddha's teachings, their minds are joyful, and the power of their will is greatly increased, so that they are able to encompass and carry out the practices of bodhisattvas. Yet they have no attachments. Not stuck with joy and happiness, but letting all the states come and go, joy and sorrow, seeming to be progressing, all filled with the power of the will is greatly increased. Here I am and I'm training hard. Or sometimes thinking, you know, my training seems to be going nowhere. Sometimes we feel one way, sometimes the other. Sometimes we feel we're really training hard, we're really making progress. Sometimes we feel just terrible and as though our life is going by and we're not in it. You know, just being able to see all these things come and go in and out, not stuck with one or the other, not stuck in the darkness. Here I am, my life's always been awful and it always will be and nothing's going to change. And not stuck with grasping after blissful states and, you know, joy. They're all judgments, and they're all our ways of creating suffering in one way or another. We'd like to be rid of all our suffering, you know, all our darknesses and all our self-judgment and stuff, but it doesn't seem to be that easy. It seems that we just need to sit still within them, allow them to come and go, accept them completely. It's so simple, we keep saying this, and yet it's completely vital and fundamental to accept what's in our mind and accept our weaknesses, our failings, our mistakes, our difficulties, our crazed opinions, our views about training, our views about ourselves and about other people and about how things should be and all that. Just to see all that and accept it with kindness and not completely believe it. And this is skillful means. Once again, the non-attachment to practice skillful means, not clinging to something. And it helps us help ourselves and also other beings because we can let go of judging ourselves and other beings. Seeing the Buddhas, hearing their teachings, they're unattached to any of them. When they see impure worlds, they have no aversion. Why? Because these bodhisattvas observe according to the Buddha teachings. In the teaching of the Buddhas, there's no defilement, neither defilement nor purity, neither darkness nor light, neither difference nor unity, neither truth nor falsehood, neither security nor danger, no right path and no wrong path. No clinging to purity and light and niceness and joy, or clinging to the darkness and our self-judgment either. Just to go through everything, back and forth, light and dark, in and out, like steps in walking, just as the Sanda Kai says. The impure world, as well as the pure ones, our bad days, our good days, our judgments of ourselves, our judgments of others, letting them go, difference and unity, beyond all of these things. To just keep on going beyond all of them, because the truth isn't found within any of these one things, it's beyond all that. And thus do bodhisattvas enter deeply into the realm of reality. This realm of reality, you know, the last chapter of the Avatamsaka, this huge chapter that Reverend Master talked about at great length some years ago, the realm of reality. It's one of those phrases that can kind of go by you. I know, like, realm of reality, not, you know, not my reality. I'm kind of, you know, outside my experience. And yet, it's not somewhere else that we're trying to get to. I want to get to this realm of reality because I'm here in this realm of God knows what. It's not somewhere else. It's right within our daily crazed experience and within our own deluded body and mind. This realm of reality is here. And we're just learning to turn towards it. It's right here within our mundane world. It's not something separate. We're not trying to get somewhere else. We're looking to realize this realm of reality right here within our everyday mundane experience. Sanctifying the mundane. Reverend Master Ji would talk about this a lot. Just our very mundane daily life. Right here is everything we need. Our Buddha nature, our training, our practice, our precepts, our mindfulness, our wisdom. It's all right here. It's not somewhere else that we're trying to get to. It's right here within us. And this is what we turn towards, the realm of reality. Thus do bodhisattvas enter deeply into the realm of reality, not by going somewhere else, but by completely accepting these things that we have right now, our own states of mind, our everyday conditions of life, our family, our work, our relationships, our struggles, our mistakes, all of it is part of the realm of reality. It's not that we do something and then we get somewhere else. It's right here. And we just keep on working towards seeing that. Just letting go of our views and our judgments that we aren't in the realm of reality or we don't know anything about this realm of reality. It's somebody else's realm of reality. We're just stuck here. Just letting go of all that as best we can and sitting right in the middle, allowing it to manifest. Even when we don't see it and we don't seem to know it, having faith in it, trusting it, that it is right here. Sometimes we feel we know it's here, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're really still and all our ideas and our judgments just seem to melt away. Here's the realm of reality. And then 5 minutes later, we can pick it all up again and then we're back in our mundane world with our worries and fears and judgments and all that. It's the same world, we're just seeing it differently. It's not being somewhere else. It's attachment that causes us to miss the realm of reality. And it arises all the time in very subtle ways. Our views, our thoughts, our opinions, our judgments, the things that seem to keep us from perceiving. Quite subtle sometimes. The more we can perceive them, the more we can relinquish our grip on them and, I don't need to believe that anymore. I can just let that go. Feeling separate, feeling we're not good enough, we don't understand, we don't know, we can't meditate, and all that, we haven't trained. Don't worry about it. Just trust the realm of reality. It's right here. We don't have to be somewhere else. We don't have to be something else. We just have everything we need here within us. So thus do bodhisattvas enter deeply into the realm of reality, teaching and transforming sentient beings without forming attachments to sentient beings. They accept and hold the teaching, yet they don't form attachments to the teaching. They arouse the will for enlightenment, abide in the abode of the Buddhas, yet they do not form attachments to the abode of Buddhas. Though they speak, their minds have no attachment to speech. All these things, all these expedient means, not attached to any of them, not attached to speech. If speech helps, fine. If not, no problem. Dwelling in concentration, but no attachment to concentration. Going to visit countless Buddha lands, but no attachment to the Buddha lands. And when they leave, they do not miss them. Just letting it all come and go, going in and out. Skillful means going wherever is needed, doing whatever needs to be done, but not clinging to any of it. Because great bodhisattvas are able to be without attachment in this way, their minds have no barriers to the Buddha teaching. And all our seeming barriers are because of our attachment, our views, our opinions, our ideas about what training is or what will help somebody, you know, our ideals of what should be or what we should be, what training should be. They just get in the way, and the more we can see them, the more they dissolve. And we can do what really needs to be done, not stuck with some ideal of what somebody needs or something or we should do, but what really is needed here to be able to see clearly, because we're not clinging to some view. And having done this, bodhisattvas perceive sentient beings, and they reflect. Sentient beings are foolish and ignorant, without knowledge or vision, without faith or understanding, lacking in intelligent action, greedy and dishonest, covetous and grasping, on and on, dreadful, revolving in the flow of birth and death. They don't seek to see the Buddha, they don't trust the Buddha. They mistakenly enter dangerous paths, and so on. They reject the ideas of the Buddhas and pursue the ideas of demons. Thus observing sentient beings, this isn't a judgment like what dumb beings these are, but how can we help these people, you know? Thus observing sentient beings, bodhisattvas increase in great compassion and develop roots of goodness, and yet they are unattached. Seeing beings constantly falling into potholes, constantly defeating themselves and getting themselves in difficulties, how can we help beings? What's needed to be done here? Without some emotional thing, oh, I have to help these poor beings, it's up to me. But just, what needs doing here? Oh, no preferences, I'll help this one, because I like them. But I won't bother with that one, it don't matter. Or no, I'm helping, you know. Sometimes we have to let somebody else help, sometimes they do a better job, just to get out of the way and let that happen. To allow somebody else to be the person who helps. It doesn't have to be me. And doing this, developing great compassion and roots of goodness, because the great compassion, once again, is the vital aspect of the whole thing. How can we practice skillful means to ourselves or to others if we don't develop great compassion? Because that's the basis. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva has 1,000 eyes and 1,000 hands. She needs 1,000 eyes so she can see what needs doing. And then she's got 1,000 hands to do it. But if she didn't have all those eyes, she wouldn't be able to help so skillfully. 1,000 eyes and 1,000 hands. To be able to see what needs doing with great compassion, all works together. And yet they're unattached. No clinging to helping. No clinging to being something. No clinging to feeling good about oneself. Never for a moment do they cling to self or entertain any conception of self or possession. No me, no virtue, my goodness, I'm doing a good deed, I'm being, you know, somebody, I'm feeling good about myself. None of that, just doing what needs to be done and then letting it go and just going on to the next thing, not even thinking about it. And some of the most admirable people are those who just quietly do something. You don't even hear about them. Sometimes you don't even notice somebody just moving something aside so you don't trip over it, you know. Beings who just help without thought, without attachment, without worrying about it, without getting all sorts of stuff in the way. Just, oh, take the thing out of that person's way so they can proceed. Help them with that thing. Just to lift the bone out of their throat, as it were, without it being a big deal. And at each point, they cultivate enlightening practice throughout the eons of the future. Not attached to the body, our own body, and all its joys and sorrows thereof. Not attached to those things, not attached to fear about the body, fear about sickness and dying. Not attached to phenomena or things, not attached to the stuff of the world or the many things we have. Not attached to recollection, to mindfulness. Practicing mindfulness, but not clinging to it. I've got to be mindful every moment, you know. Doing our best with it, but not clinging to some ideal of mindfulness. Just doing our best. And what happens when we can't practice mindfulness? What happens when our mind gets old and fuzzy? Will we be without our Buddha nature? No, just do our best. Not attached to vows, to making things. Vows are really helpful for many people in their training. I find it helpful to make vows, but not attached to that. Not attached to making some great vow and some great renunciation or some great deed, but just, okay, it's good, fine, we don't have to make a big deal of it. Use it to help us. Not attached to any of these things. Not attached to concentration. Not attached to contemplation. Not attached to the forms of meditation, to experiences in meditation, to being able to meditate really well. We just do our best. It comes and goes. Sometimes it feels like we're really still contemplative, meditative. Sometimes we feel just like we're a mess. Is our training better on one day than the other? We don't know. We just do our best. And not judging. Oh, my training is terrible. My meditation is awful. This is hopeless. Or, oh, I'm doing really well here, you know. We're just doing our best with the moment we have right now. Because it's what we need. Here we are with our mind just as it is, doing our best with that. Not attached to some ideal of meditation or contemplation or mindfulness. Not attached to tranquil stabilization. Not attached to spheres or objects, to things. Not attached to teaching and training sentient beings. I am the one who's helping. I can do something. I'm worth something. I'm training and teaching sentient beings. Therefore, I'm worth feeding. You know, what if I can't? What if I'm suddenly struck clueless, dumb, have a stroke and can't do anything? Am I still worth feeding or not? You know, we can have an attachment to being able to do stuff. And if we can't do things, what are we going to be worth? So look at that. How much do I invest in what I can do and how much I can help beings? Do I have the faith in my innate goodness, in my innate Buddha nature, whether I realize it or not, that actually I am part of that and therefore worth something? Just as a little bird out there is worth something, just building its nest or not building its nest, or some little creature that's just living its life. You know, they're worth something. Maybe we are too. Not thinking we're only worth something because we can help other beings, but actually we have intrinsic worth, and trusting that. Something to consider. And not attached to entering the realm of reality. Not even attached to realizing truth. To being within that realm. Turning towards it, but not attached to entering it. Just doing our best. How do we devote ourselves to training, to arouse the will for enlightenment, and yet have no attachment to enlightenment? It's by giving ourselves to it. Not giving part of ourselves in the hope of getting something. We're not giving with one hand and taking with the other. But we're giving with both hands because we have nothing to lose. There is nothing within us that we cannot just give away. Because we have everything we need over and over. Our training, we give ourselves to completely, without reservation, without limit, without holding back. It's only our views and our attachments and our fears and judgments and so forth that seem to prevent us from doing that. If we can trust that what we have to give is actually worth giving, and that we are intrinsically worthwhile, then we can give ourselves completely. If we think, oh, I don't have anything to give, or I'm not very good at this, or I don't, my meditation is poor, I don't know anything about, you know, then we're only giving half-heartedly because we're afraid. But if we can just not worry about that stuff, just give ourselves completely to the Dharma, to our training and practice, and not worry about all the judgment, then the barriers dissolve. The Bodhisattvas pass unspeakably many unspeakable numbers of eons, teaching and edifying beings. They rescue all without weariness of mind, never getting discouraged or giving up, either on ourselves or on other beings. To be willing to spend countless eons in our training, giving with both hands, never thinking, well, someday I'll have it, it'll be done. You have this thing in the back of our mind that one day our training will be over. We'll have done our training, then we can relax and enjoy it. Joy, enlightenment. And in fact, I think it's not quite like that. To spend countless eons in doing our training, it's exhausting to think about it, you know. Endless eons and endless worlds helping endless beings to, with our endless training, and we just want to lie down and die at the thought. But in fact, we can only do it one breath at a time. We can't do it all at once. And where else do we have to go? Do we have other plans? It's just that we think the thought of having this countless eons of training, kalpas of work, we have no idea. It just feels like kalpas. And in just a moment, there's a moment of stillness, and then it's gone. Not to hold on to an idea of enlightenment or perfection or what a Buddha is or what we may be or what we may never be or what we can do or what we can't do, but just to do the training, one breath at a time, one moment at a time. We don't have to worry about the countless eons. All we can do is just do the best we can right in this moment, because the realm of reality isn't something somewhere else way off in the future that we can't get to. Or maybe we will one day, but who knows, it's iffy, you know. It's right here. We live within it right now. To trust that, just doing our training, doing what we can to help ourselves, help other beings, just practicing kindness to ourselves and to others, just keeping the precepts, doing our meditation as best we can, doing what needs to be done. Kindness. Just doing that and trusting that. By virtue of great commitment and will, these bodhisattvas remain secure among all those beings, various kinds of speech, deeds, attachments, devices, routines, activities, births and deaths, and teach them and help beings, never letting their minds be disturbed or discouraged, and never for a moment forming any thought of attachment, just not clinging to any idea of I'm helping or getting some reward or some result. Helping beings without expecting anything. Helping ourselves without expecting anything. Just trusting that we are right here within the realm of reality. And why? Because they have attained non-attachment and independence, freedom from these ideas of getting something or limitation or I can do this, I can't do that. And therefore, their own benefit and the benefit of others, both, is fulfilled with purity. Both our own benefit and the benefit of others, equally. We're not just training for ourselves, we're not just training to help other beings, we're doing it for both, helping ourselves and other beings. By trusting that we have the innate peace of heart within us. We are within the realm of reality. We just don't know it yet. But to trust that we are within the realm of reality already, and just keep turning towards it, to keep entrusting ourselves to it, and letting go of all those seeming barriers of I can't do it, or judgment, or this person is like this, that person is like that, I can't help, or I am helping. Just letting go of all of that and just doing our best, practicing kindness, trusting in the realm of reality. Non-attachment, skillful means, they seem to work together in this way. And that's it. Thank you.